I want to bring back Rashid Khalidi, the Edward Said Professor of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University, to really think about the other important element that all of these nations we've been talking about this week have in common: Tunisia, Yemen, Jordan, which is also having some demonstrations on the streets, and of course Egypt. All of their governments are strong allies and partners of the United States government. Rashid Khalidi, what is the U.S. the important sort of U.S. play here today?
Well, the United States seems to have been motivated by a belief that the only way to both deal with radical, dangerous jihadi terrorism and the political opposition posed by groups like the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt was to have strong, repressive, autocratic regimes. And those are the kinds of regimes that the United States has very consistently supported throughout the Arab world for many, many years. So we are tarred with the failures of all of these regimes to develop political participation, to deal with the pervasive corruption, and to provide jobs for the growing population of these countries.
Does that mean we have influence, and should we decide to engage on the question of human rights and the democratic demands of the people in the street, that the fact that we give $3 billion of aid to Egypt, would that be persuasive in any way?
Well, hopefully the United States will weigh in favor of regime change, which is what's really needed. What's needed is not reform. Reform has been a word that's been bandied about all too often, and it usually means tinkering with the corrupt system that exists. What's really needed is root and branch change in these countries, hopefully not destabilizing or too destabilizing, but these are going to be difficult regimes to change, whether in Tunisia or in Egypt or elsewhere. And the other thing you want to hope is that the fact that the tear gas being used, being produced in the United States, the fact that the techniques, I mean, most of this money we've been giving to Egypt has been going, much of it certainly has been going to the security forces and the army. I don't think many people thank us for that. So the United States has a lot of things to worry about. But I think minor adjustments are not what's called for here. There's going to have to be some major shifts if these regimes, if these countries are to meet the aspirations of their people.
And events are moving very quickly. I mean, we're getting reports now that Mohamed El-Baradei, Nobel Peace Laureate, is under house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
In Egypt, in Cairo, after experiencing some of the violence and brutality of the police, he was holed up in a mosque for a while. What do you make of El-Baradei being under house arrest? He was described by some of the protesters as a minor figure for getting involved late in the game. Mm-hmm. Does this elevate him?
You know, I've heard those criticisms of him on various of the satellite TV stations I've watched. I don't think he as a person is necessarily that important. I think what's important are questions a little bit down the line. Will the Tunisians be able to put together an election, and in that election, will there be organized political forces that can challenge the entrenched former ruling party? Similarly, will this regime in Egypt give way to a freer system, and will the opposition be able to put? Will there be coherent forces in the opposition that can A, challenge the ruling party in a free election if there is one, and B, put together a government that can actually deal with the country's problems? I mean, there was a piece in today's Financial Times by Anthony Cordesman which warned darkly that the problem is going to be governance and dealing with the real problems. And three steps down the line, I think those are things to worry about. Right now, I think the issue has got to be, is there going to be enough change to meet these enormously angry young people who have pent-up demands that are almost all, everybody agrees, legitimate?
And as you've said on this program before, even though it's young people in the streets, the demands for democracy in Egypt, at least from the middle and intellectual classes in Egypt, are long-standing and old.
Exactly.
And go back decades. I guess what I'm wondering is, I was reading this morning a quote from Naguib Mahfouz, the other Nobel laureate, who's an Egyptian. He, of course, wrote novels and described the Mubarak government as one that gave him a particular freedom. This was a comment made long ago. How have we gotten to this point? Because there was a certain amount of satisfaction with Mubarak for a while.
Well, I mean, 30 years in power will do that to any regime. And the cronyism and the corruption that develop over time, the sense of entitlement, the arrogance, are things that just develop, as I say, over time. And that's what's happened in all of these cases, from Syria to the various monarchies, which are yet another issue. I mean, all of these monarchies, even those that have some forms of democracy, like Morocco and Jordan, have enormous shares of the national wealth being appropriated whether in the Gulf countries or whether elsewhere, by very narrow elites, whether they're members of the monarchy and the ruling families or whether they're members of an oligarchy like in Egypt and Tunisia. And that has gotten worse and worse over time, and it's the most severe in countries like Egypt and Tunisia, which don't have oil.
Well, you know, there's a broad,
or very little oil.
Right. There's a broad issue here. I mean, I recall the U.S. experience in the non-Arab country of Iran, where they were in a bind in that they had to support the Shah in some sense. And when the revolution happened in Iran, the U.S. could not possibly be anything but the great Satan. Here, in this much broader movement that's taking place, the interconnections between the U.S. and governments, and particularly the interconnections between, say, the Saudis and some of these governments, are so sort of, you know, at odds with each other. It's very, very difficult to imagine how this thing plays out, because people don't seem to have a lot of room to move.
Well, each of these countries has its own specificity. I mean, there may be a wave, or there may not be a wave going through this region, but what happens in Tunis is not the same as what happens in Egypt and so forth. I mean, Yemen is a particular, peculiar, very dangerous case. I think you have to watch each of these cases individually. Egypt is a country that has had parliamentary rule for decades in the 20th century. Egypt is a country where ideas of constitutionalism were being argued about in the 1870s and 1860s. So these are countries with deep traditions of respect for popular sovereignty and limitations on the power of the executive. Let us see if those better instincts of the Egyptians stand up against the authoritarian tendency that's been in Egypt since the time of the pharaohs, against some of the retrograde influences that groups like the Muslim Brotherhood represent, and against the external influence of powers like Saudi Arabia, and the United States, frankly, which are status quo powers. I personally don't wring my hands one minute for the policymakers who made every wrong decision over decades and now don't know what to do. Well, of course they don't know what to do. They've never done anything right in these kinds of cases, most of them. And I don't really care what they do at this stage. What the Egyptians do, what the Tunisians, the Jordanians do, that's, I think, the important thing to look at. And it's not, you know, going to necessarily be a bed of roses. This may be very messy and in many cases very unpleasant. It's going to be very hard for people living there. I mean, any of us who have family in these countries understands that instability is not something that's easy to deal with. I lived in Lebanon, as you know, John, for many years during war. You were there for some
right.
of that time. And it's a tough row to hoe for the people who are going to have to go
Indeed.
Through this.
And disruption is a part of this process, and we'll see where it goes from here. Rashid Khalidi, Edward Said, Professor of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University. Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye now.